This is Mary Harrison and Galvi Dinman. I'm interviewing Dr. Walter Jacob, and Galvi Dinman is taking the notes, and this is August 26th, and we're in Dr. Jacob's office, and this is tape 4, side 7. Walter, I was going to ask you, that after your basic training, you mentioned on the last time we interviewed you, the training that you had been informed of all the different religions of the different soldiers that you would be encountering as a chaplain. And what kind of training did you get? And then, if you don't mind, I'd like you to also mention the training you had in Cincinnati, if you had any extra training.
First of all, the training at the Hebrew Union, College there, is and was a professor who specialized in New Testament. So you took some courses and could take others if you were so inclined. So every graduate of the Hebrew Union College knows a good deal, certainly about Christianity. And that's mainly what we were dealing with in the American military forces, certainly at that point. In the military training, there was an effort to familiarize all chaplains with details of ritual, because that's where we would be less concerned with theology. You wouldn't be a military chaplain unless you had a fairly broad view of religious life. And so we needed to know what is done when a Catholic dies, when a Baptist dies, when a Methodist dies, when a Mormon dies, or what is done in some other paths along the way, that you are able, as a non-Mormon or non-Catholic, to perform. And that was fairly clear cut and simple. In peacetime, you never need to go down that road. So the only thing you have to be careful about then is that you don't counsel people of another religious faith, which is sometimes really tricky, because occasionally a person will show up and indicate that they don't see eye to eye with a Catholic chaplain, let's say. Or there'll be somebody who, I had a problem like that once with a Greek Orthodox young man who did not feel that he was talking to a Catholic chaplain, and was quite willing, more willing to talk to me as a Jewish chaplain. The Catholic chaplains on base were not particularly happy.
And why, why were you talking?
No, it doesn't matter.
It's the personality.
It didn't work out. So I made it very clear that what I was doing was talking to him just as a person. And we stayed out of any religious matters. And otherwise, in the military, you try to do a lot of general counseling, you might say. And if you are the lowest person in the order of chaplain, like I was, you're assigned the prison and deal with whoever enters the prison. And I quickly learned what my father, Springfield, Missouri, learned very early on, that the people who are there are not only there for good reason in most instances, but are willing to do almost anything to get their sentence or position reduced, including a lot of lies. You learn how to deal with people in that kind of a situation who are have problems aside from whatever they need to put them in prison for. Let me talk about something entirely different for a moment, because I wanted to add a P.S. To the Hebrew Union College, because what I did not emphasize sufficiently was that this was a very interesting time to go to the Hebrew Union College, because it was a time of transition of faculty. So I had a lot of the professors who had been there for 30 years, maybe even more, and who had a certain point of view, and then a total new group who represented an entirely different approach to almost everything. And that was fascinating, as also was the ability to study with some of the former refugee scholars who came over here and found a position at the Hebrew Union College, not always commensurate with their field or their abilities. For example, we had one of the greatest Assyriologists of the day at the Hebrew Union College. And of course, the number of people taking Assyriology is very limited. And his ideas as a German scholar of what students should be capable of and what they should do when they came to grammar were quite different from what American students were willing to do. And so it must have been somewhat frustrating for some people like that. The greatest musicologist, Jewish musicologist of the day, who also happened to have been a good friend of mine, a late father, Eric Werner, was also there. And some other figures like that. And I got to know Leo Beck quite well, and another professor by the name of Teubler, and a historian, extremely well, T-A-U-E-L-E-R. So it was an interesting time. The younger professors were reasonably close to my age, maybe within a decade. And so it was easy to become friends with them, and the very youngest were often their graduate students, while I was studying for the rabbinate, so we took classes together. So the relationship was quite different than it would have been with someone a few years later. So it was an interesting time. And there were also possibilities to do some academic work on your own. So I wrote a couple of prize essays on various subjects. And that enabled one to work with people more closely. And, learn a little bit beyond the seminar.
What was the subject of your essay?
They were not published. One was on the blessing, and one was on the third commandment, its various interpretations. Another was, I don't think it came up, I don't remember. But that's easy to do. Just shut this machine up for a moment. Okay. All right, now we need the titles of prize essays. Okay, one of them is Emergency in Talmudic Law. And the other was a comparison of the theology of Isaac Meir Wise and Kaufman Kohler.
Okay. The third commandment.
Right.
Okay, Walter, one thing. When I'm assuming that when you were in the Army, you were
Air Force.
The Air Force. I'm so sorry. And you were a chaplain, you were still considered a rabbi.
Sure.
Okay. So you have a leave of absence, or?
No. Every graduate of the rabbinic seminaries, any rabbinic seminary at that point, unless they were conscientious objectors, was expected to serve in the military, or unless rejected for some physical reason, or unless they had served before. And some were veterans of the Second World War, they were not expected to serve in the military.
So first you have your affiliation with a temple or with a synagogue, and then you go?
That just was an accidental entrance.
Okay. All right.
You go immediately.
Okay. Okay, we are to courtship and marriage. How did you and Irene meet?
Did we finish the whole military school? Let me add one other thing, perhaps, to that. The experience in the Far East that taught me a lot about Oriental religions, because there was an opportunity to see them firsthand and not just to study them in a book. And principally, of course, that's Buddhism and the Hindu religion, Shinto to some extent. And there were, after all, plenty of opportunities to travel, so and I used others. And that was very helpful.
And how did you get to meet all the people that you needed to really know a little bit more about Buddhism and Hinduism?
Well, what I did was read first as much as I could, and then go talk to people. It was not difficult to find people who spoke English. After all, Japan was occupied by the Americans. India had just been left by the English. And the rest of Southeast Asia, English was widely spoken. This was not dialogue. Most of these individuals had never met a Jew, and probably never met another one after they saw me. But it was an interesting opportunity.
And were they interested in the monotheistic religion?
Not particularly.
They weren't. It was sort of a one.
Yes. And also to see Catholicism in a totally different manifestation as it is in the Philippines.
Such as?
Well, it's probably much more like as you would find it in Mexico.
But a large percentage of Filipinos are Catholic, aren't they?
Except in the Southern Islands, where there are followers of Islam, everybody's Catholic, almost everybody. There, you end up with strange mixtures in a trip into a hill country in northern Luzon. It's way off. I stayed overnight in some little town, and in the morning was able to purchase a rice cup. Is still sitting on the fireplace. And I asked, why are they going to sell this figure? Very nice, simply carved figure. Well, the people said, you've been Catholic for a long time. I thought we decided we would now abandon this. So in many instances in the off-beat sections of the country, I'm sure, Catholicism has taken a long, long time to really take hold.
Did you run into quite a few Muslims? Or?
I never went to Mindanao. It was possible, but difficult. And commercially, it would have been very difficult. It would have been possible to get on the Coast Guard volunteers for watching the coast. It was also dangerous because through this whole time there was guerrilla warfare. Not only there, but on the main island where I was.
So did you feel in danger?
No, you didn't feel danger, but you also didn't want to get yourself into the line of fire if you didn't have to.
Is there anything else that you would like to tell us about your...
About that? No, I don't think so. I think that's enough. It was interesting and it was lucky to have gone there.
I can imagine. Fascinating. We're going to get to courtship and marriage. How did you meet all
of you? Courtship and marriage. Well, first of all, I came back here to Pittsburgh. And I think I'll talk to you about that. Maybe. And
in 57.
57. Okay. In that first summer, I decided to go and see something of Europe, and my parents suggested that I ought to meet as many members of the family as possible. I was intended to visit England, visit my uncle Matt and some other relatives, and they indicated that I really would be in Italy on a vacation from Israel. She had lived in Israel for 10 years by then.
And you had never met her before?
Oh, yes. We had met in 1939 and 40 for 8-9 months. And we had also met once before in Hamburg in 1937. Long time before. But we had not met in between or had any contact. And, of course, we didn't know what we looked like, so we simply set a place to meet at one of the major churches, the steps, picked that one because this is a church that has two entrances at opposite ends, which are both major.
So you were at one and she was at the other, or?
No, we kept walking back and forth, looking to see for somebody that was looking for something. Santa Maria Maggiore. It's a great church. And it's now being restored. We were there last week. And so finally we met and spent a good bit of time the next day together because it happened to be one of those Roman holidays when everything we try to visit is closed. The whole city shuts down. So we wandered from one site or museum to another, hoping that the next one would be an exception. And of course, it was not. And then I wanted to go to Naples and Keston and the property. And she had just been there, so she didn't want to do that. So then I think we saw each other again for the day after that in Monaco. And then she went off to London and then I was off to Northern Italy. And what did I see? Florence, and on the way to Florence, the city where the Giottos are, remind me of that. It's on the way, that was kind of funny because, yes, the guy was clearly used to having much older people on board because we all got out there, but the boys spent much time as I could looking at it. And then for the rest of the trip, she had been very talkative and told us about the whole landscape, the other towns we passed. She was absolutely quiet. I tried to get to stir her up. But she didn't know anything about any place north of that because all of her visitors always fell asleep after that point.
She had this young guy there. You challenged her.
Then in Florence, I went sightseeing and saw as much of Florence as you can in a few days. I went off to Ravenna, also beautiful. And then to London, first to Paris for a couple of days. To Switzerland, Spain. Saw very little of Paris, and it was a time of endurance when everybody was walking around. Police were walking around with heavy arms. And off to London to see my uncle and aunt and Marini again. And there she tells me that as I was the honored guest, she had to give up her bedroom and she was moved somewhere else.
So German.
And then we decided to get married.
In London. I mean, you knew in London already that you wanted to get married?
Yes. Well, okay. Actually, I think I put it a little differently because I wasn't sure that this was fair to ask her side, knowing nothing about America, never mind being a rabbi, but just nothing about America. So I asked her if she wanted to come and see what this was really like. Decided that I might as well get married.
When
is that? The marriage?
What were they?
Oh, that was much later. So we had known each other probably was considerably less than a week.
Love at first sight?
Well, we both felt that this was right. And then we set it. The date setting was not easy because that had to be done by mail and telephone calls. You know, there were all these complications. Was Irene going to go back to Israel or not go back to Israel? And, she had all sorts of presents already. We were together for a day, I think it was, or something like that, carrying her bag, which was full of gifts, heavy gifts, pile gifts, and for friends. And then it was a matter of her parents and everything around.
So you married in London?
We married in London then, on October 30th.
It was 58?
58 days. I just took a short leave here and went over, arrived a few days before the wedding.
Did your parents and your brother?
My parents did not go because they had been in London just in the summer. And so it was just too expensive for them. My brother and sister-in-law happened to be in Europe where he was working on his doctorate. This was a paper, ended up as a book, on German politics. I have to get the precise title. It's the only time he dealt with something outside the United States. So he was working on that, and he represented the family. It was a small wedding.
Did you go on a honeymoon?
Yes, we went on a honeymoon. And I still remember arriving in London. And of course, this was both my aunt and my mother-in-law to be. And I was immediately put to work because the wedding was going to be, the reception was going to be a problem. So, I started dusting chairs. I figured that was a long way to come to dust chairs.
Did they live in New York?
No, they had a very nice house. I'll have to think about the exact address. But in sort of Hempstead, that area of London. And we went on a honeymoon to Torquay, which is supposed to be the English Mediterranean.
And?
That means that they have a few potted palms standing outside, daring the weather.
Yeah, what's the weather like?
The weather in November is cold and sort of windy. Certainly no place to go swimming. But it was very nice, and we are also very un-English because in the dining room everybody else was absolutely quiet. And we talked to each other.
Were you like one of the younger couples as well again, or?
Oh yeah, most of the people in middle age.
Yeah.
And besides, we needed to get acquainted. We didn't know each other. And after that, the first day actually, we did not spend down there, but we spent at the American Embassy. Had to register. And then when the honeymoon was over, I left her behind and went off to America because she had no visa.
And you being you were already an American citizen. So right. So did that help?
No, it didn't make any difference. I mean, it made a difference, but lots of American servicemen were marrying English girls, German girls in this case, because they were further went after the nation of birth. So there was potentially a long way.
Well, so she was on the German quota.
Yeah. But so I eventually, and I guess I didn't break out in contact with some people here who had some political clout, and got the show on the road because otherwise it could have lasted forever.
You were in the right congregation, so that's fine.
Yes, oh yeah, that certainly helped. See, Ben came over here in December, sort of middle December.
So just a month then?
About 6 weeks. And by ship on the ship was a Queen Elizabeth. With lots of all the wedding gifts and all of that sort of stuff. The customs officials were very nice because they really must have looked poor. And they looked at this, and we said, told them what it was, and they said, well, you've used it, haven't you?
Making us, putting words in your mouth, huh?
Of course, yes.
So did you meet the ship in New York then?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we just had a day or so in New York, which, of course, surprised me because Israel had been a country of poor country. Rationing, not much of anything. And now she was in America with all of these luxuries. You use a couple once and throw it away. All of these kinds of things.
Was it a hard adjustment for her?
Well, eventually, it wasn't a hard adjustment, but she is a person who adjusts easily. And so coming to Pittsburgh, we came by train. That had its funny incident, too, because we arrived in a blinding snowstorm. And there must have been a foot and a half of snow. So there were no taxis at the train station, nothing. So I said, all right, wait here, I'll see what I can find. And I wandered around, but went to the waiting can, wherever else. And it must have taken me a half hour to find the taxi. She probably thought that she was now abandoned.
That's no trouble.
Then off to my small bachelor apartment.
Which was where?
Which was on Fifth Avenue. No, this was at the other end of the town, near Chatham College. Just one large room, actually, and a little kitchen and bathroom. And then the next day, I was working.
And what did you mean?
She was on her own. What she did was she marched down to Shady Side, or this Liberty, and bought some plants to add to the apartment. And otherwise, the adjustment for her could not have been easy because the, was meeting an awful lot of people. Suddenly being tossed into not only a strange culture, but something that was exactly the opposite of Israel. This city still is, but even then was quite formal. It would have been a lot easier to go to the West. Israel was, at that time, very informal. So here she was, and I think the second day that she was here, maybe the third day, it was Mrs. J. Leonard Levy's 90th birthday. and there were several hundred ladies of the sisterhood, all of whom she met. They all looked exactly alike. They all had the same hairstyle. They all wore the same kind of dresses. And she couldn't tell one from the other after like 2 years.
That's a very European observation.
But people were very nice and did their really did their best to make her feel at home.
Was she formally introduced as your wife and then?
No, there wasn't anything like that.
And what was expected of her?
Nothing.
Not really nothing? I mean, did she have to be social? Was that because you felt that if there wasn't a requirement? I thought there was sort of, you know, the rejection.
No, because first of all, there was a witness in Freehold, so you didn't need to fill that role. So what she did was she did go to sisterhood board meetings for about 20 years, I think. And she decided that that was more than sufficient.